Welcome to Church Sound Podcast. I'm your host, James.
And I'm Gary.
We're audio engineers, authors, and educators with a special focus on houses of worship. And don't you worry, Samantha will be back soon.
And on this episode, we're going to talk immersive sound.
Maybe they should add some like special reverb effect on that. That'd be really sweet.
And on this episode, we're going to talk immersive sound.
Hey, quick shout out to this show's sponsors. We want to thank ElectroVoice, who have been a leader in church sound since the beginning, and today offers the industry's largest portfolio of loudspeaker system solutions for houses of worship of all sizes. Elevate the audio experience with ElectroVoice. We also want to thank Digico. Their new Quantum 852 and other House of Worship solutions are available at digico.biz.
Well, all right, James. Are you ready to jump into the sound of immersive sound?
I am ready to be immersed.
Immersed completely here. Well, you know, immersive has become a hot topic, you know, lately. At least I'm hearing it a lot. And we're seeing it come out in live performances. So the big thing probably to ask, first of all, is what is immersive sound?
Yeah, is it like the same thing as surround sound or like the 5.1 system that I got for my DVD player or what? Like, what is immersive and why is that different from what we've had before?
Yeah, you know, in my definition of immersive sound, that would include really all of that stuff. And we've had what I would say is immersive sound, you know, back in the theater, you know, when we started introducing surround sound and all of that. But for today's conversation, let's focus in on the music that we're hearing now. And probably the biggest thing that happened on the consumer level side of people seeing and experiencing this was Dolby Atmos, in which Apple Music calls spatial audio. And according to Apple, spatial audio with Dolby Atmos lets it take it all the way to 11. Spinal Tap.
Yep. Included. I see what they did there.
Yeah. They say that by clarifying and amplifying every layer, almost as though we're right there with the band in the legendary studio or laying waste to an iconic festival stage, it's an immersive listening experience where sound comes from, around, and above you. It's the next jump forward in music, from mono to stereo and into the future. Sounds like a little marketing ploy and hyperbole there, but
just a little bit.
Yeah, just a little bit. but what spatial audio introduced was that it kind of created for us in the listening world, and again, using, you know, the right playback thing. Like, I think with Apple, it's got to be on their AirPods or, you know, specially designed audio playback system to get the full experience of what spatial, you know, offers us. But it really widened the soundscape for us from just being either mono, you know, center channel, or stereo, left, right, which is what, you know, we're very accustomed to and used to kind of creating this spatial sphere, if you will, around your head where you can kind of move objects around in that listening field.
Yeah, I know, like one thing that's been around a little while is the Clang monitoring system that uses some of that.
Yes.
And I think from the people that I've heard that have used it, like it helps really, you know, get more separation for their monitor mixes. And I've never, you know, I haven't heard anybody say, oh, I hate the Clang system. And so, you know, everybody that I've talked to that has actually used it is like really enjoyed it. So, yeah, it's a fascinating thing applied to pro audio for churches. It's like, where do we make that jump and why would we want it for our space?
Yeah, definitely. Well, I'm glad you brought the Clang audio thing in because it leads into some important points about what, you know, spatial, you know, audio or, you know, as we're calling it, immersive, you know, offers. Again, I'm going to quote a little bit from Apple here where they say spatial audio is created by mapping audio parts of a piece of content to specific points on a digital 3D space. So, you know, imagine sticking this, you know, imagine sticking your head in the center of a globe, right? And now you're able to kind of map it around that globe. As they go on to say, it creates a sphere around the listener and each audio source placed around it. You can listen to the spatial audio on headphones or single speakers that are designed for the format. So, again, we kind of take that idea and we apply it to what we're calling immersive, which is for, you know, live performances. And there have been a, you know, number of manufacturers that now have introduced various different forms of this, you know, immersive experience. So, you know, James, we were talking a little bit ahead of time, and you've had basically very minimal exposure to the spatial stuff. Is that correct?
Yeah, I haven't gotten to experience one in a demo or played around with it. So it's, you know, aside from being at a movie theater, all this is new to me.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's definitely become a super hot button. You know, we've got players, you know, in the space like L Acoustics with their Lisa system. D&B has Soundscape. Fulcrum has their Fulcrum Immersive or Venuflex. And then Meyer has what they call Space Map Go, or what there's another version called Constellation. We'll get a little bit into that, you know, more later on of what's there. But, you know, the idea of creating an immersive experience, for me, I look at it, and I have had the opportunity to hear some of the immersive stuff. And particularly, I got to at least mix some tracks and so forth on a L Acoustics Lisa system. And I've heard a few shows mixed on that system as well. And it does really kind of change and create a different environment and a different experience for the listener. You know, a common setup for most of the immersive systems are there's probably five speaker sources, if you will, you know, that are up front, and you can move your sound source all through those five different fields, if you will. And then also you can push the source back into the room, in other words, deeper on the stage, or move it right up to the front of the stage. So you've kind of got this area of sound, if you will, and you kind of can place those things, you know, the sound sources in that space. So that is what we call object-based mixing. That's another phrase that is used a lot. So I guess let me add one other piece in there, and then I'll let you ask me some questions. We also have this, what's called variable acoustics. Variable acoustics is different than object-based mixing. Object-based mixing is we're just moving things around, if you will, where they are coming from, rather than just being the, you know, mono center cluster that some churches are set up with, or the stereo system that, you know, we see very common, you know, obviously in church where you've got a line array left and right. You know, now you've got these five fields or maybe seven fields up front where I can move, you know, objects, if you will, between there. Whereas variable acoustics is doing even more than that. And we've got speakers that are placed around the room, and we're actually trying to make the room sound different by what we are bringing through those different speakers in the room. I think D&B Soundscape allows you to do that. Fulcrum Immersive, their Venuflex system, allows you to do that. And then Meyer has the Constellation. And Meyer, I think, was the pioneer here. There was maybe a few people before that. But, you know, Meyer's Constellation system was you had all these speakers all around the room, and then you would kind of place things in that field where you wanted to. And there was microphones all around the room as well. And so you could literally have your room feel different and sound different. Whereas the object-based mixing is more about just placing items in space.
Right. So, you know, back for the simpletons like myself, you know, mono, we've got one sound source, or all of our sound sources coming from one single speaker.
Yes.
When we have stereo and we have the same signal coming at the same level from both the speakers, we get this idea in our brain that it's coming from right in front of us, even if the speakers are on either side of us. And that's been, to me, like, helpful for churches, not just to, like, maximize the coverage that they can get from left to right. You know, like, not every system is set up to be just like a, you know, covered by one mono channel, right? So we've got to get pretty wide coverage, or we've got more of a wider room than deeper room. So we need more than one speaker. So we'll go ahead and call those stereo. And then we can put some things in the left side that aren't in the right side, and some things that are on the right side that aren't in the left side, to kind of create a virtual or a perceived, like, left to right kind of panoramic spectrum in the audio field. And some people will even argue, you know, like, well, live sound doesn't even need stereo because there's people on the left side that can't hear the right speaker. And
right.
And I get that. There's part of that that's tricky, or that stereo doesn't serve people well in that way. But now what you're talking about is we're not just moving things left to right with a pan knob or a pan pot, but we're actually using these five or seven speakers to change the perceived distance of where something is. And is it in the vertical plane as well, or is it just more front to back? Like, this sounds like it's farther away, or this sounds like it's closer because of the way that the sound source is being processed by the speakers. Kind of help me understand that a little bit better.
Yeah. No, that's a great question. And it's kind of like, you know, early movie theater surround sound, you know, had speakers around you. Now with, you know, the Dolby Atmos, there's even speakers above you and so forth. So, you know, you are totally immersed. In the object-based mixing, which I really think we'll spend most of our time talking about, because that's by far the most prevalent application and installations that I see going in are more based around object-based mixing than overall variable acoustics. In object-based mixing, you can move stuff, obviously, left to right between these different fields, but you also can move them kind of forward and back on the stage. So they're still very focused on the stage and the experience. Now, again, you can go and you can add what we would call effect or auxiliary speakers, again, to create an effect. So you could put, you know, speakers down the sidewalls or the back walls, much like a surround, or speakers overhead. But I've not seen that as a common application going into, you know, house of worship installs.
Right. Now, we've talked about what it is, and we've talked about kind of how it's deployed a little bit, but I think one of the things that I thought of, you know, like, the first time I thought of that is like, well, I'm a little bit cynical from time to time. And I, you know, I hear about, you know, spatial and immersive stuff, and like, I'm kind of like, huh, well, why do we need that? You know, like, stereo is good enough. And I'm like, okay, let's put away the curmudgeon and actually think about this. And I'm sure people thought that the same time there were moving lights in church, and like, anytime there was anything, you know, like, somebody started putting electric guitars in church, you know, like, there are these cultural shifts where we change the way that we listen to music, and we change the way that music is, you know, the environments in which we listen to music or see, you know, things that happen in concerts make their way into the church. And I think the reason that if you're tempted to like listen to this and just kind of dismiss it, I think I would be a little bit cautious about dismissing it so quickly, because like, there's a lot of stuff in the Bible where God makes things really, really ornate in the places where his people are worshiping him. you know, the tabernacle in the, mm-hmm. the desert with Moses. There was a whole lot of detail that went on there and a whole lot of, you know, really very clearly described things about like how it should look and how the different bells should be hung on the robes and all these things. And then in like Solomon's temple, you know, there were, you know, enormous, you know, giant gold bowls. And, you know, like there's all these things that were massively expensive. You could say they were exorbitant. But they created an atmosphere where people were coming to gather and, you know, and worship. So when we're gathering and like making our worship spaces now, we're not just trying to like emulate the culture and be like, well, this concert had it, so we need it at our church. That's not really the idea, but how can we leverage the technology that we have in order to make it a place where people have a memorable experience of singing and encountering, you know, the sacraments or whatever else that it is that's part of our worship service, if it makes it memorable in a way that draws its attention toward, you know, heaven, that I think is a good use of it. And like I was saying earlier, moving lights, you know, could be used as a distraction. It was like, wow, like, look how it's highlighting the worship leader and their guitar looks so cool on the, you know, stage. You're like, check out the bass player and the drummer. You know, we could use the lighting system to highlight the people on stage and make them look like celebrities. But that same equipment could be used to highlight a certain feeling based on the lyrics of a song that are pointing toward the truths of the gospel. You know, so if we can use moving lights, which could seem, you know, quite, you know, immersive, so to speak, mm-hmm. With their, you know, lights that are facing the audience, you know, facing the congregation, or lights that are even hung in the congregation. If we can utilize those in ways that help us see and savor, you know, the, what's the word I'm looking for? The intangible or the transcendent parts of that, you know, like we're made to experience sounds from all around us. Like if you go out in the woods and you're in nature, kind of like God designed the garden, there's sounds coming from all around us. Why wouldn't we also have our sound system have sounds coming from all around us? It's not a big jump to make, you know, logically of just because it's new doesn't mean that it's bad. And just because it's got an extra like bit of senses that it's touching on that we're not used to doesn't mean that it's necessarily distracting. It could be used in actually really tasteful ways that make you feel like you're part of something bigger than yourself in a way that points to those truths of being part of the body of Christ and things like that. So hopefully now you're still tracking with me if you were a little bit like, I'm skeptical about this. I was too at first. So, but I think we can see if it's something that might fit for your church and the way that you guys have decided, like, you know, this is going to reach our community in whatever city you're in. Mm-hmm. And this makes sense. You know, it's not just, you know, hey, we want the latest and the best because, you know, we want the shiny stuff and we want to be able to say, you know, we got the magazine, you know, write up because our church was really cool and we did it first. Let's put all that aside and say, does it help us accomplish our mission in reaching people and helping people have memorable worship experiences mm-hmm. that, you know, help us touch the transcendent and the intangible? So I think it's worth looking into. That's my conclusion.
Well, that's great. And I'm glad that you went down kind of the experiential, you know, side of it and all that, because there's an important part of that. And, you know, I'll just add on that for a minute. Then I've got a real practical thing I want to, you know, kind of come back to. But definitely on the experiential side of, you know, we come together for corporate worship for a corporate experience. Again, a common experience and so forth. And so having a system that allows you to feel like you are part of the band or you are on stage, you're part of this, again, as you said, something bigger than you, I think is, you know, an absolutely worthwhile adventure to look at. And how do we use technology to make us feel more of a community having a common experience? So on the experiential side, you know, I am 100% on board with you, you know, there with that. You know, if we do something just to try to be cool, we've missed the boat by a long shot. But boy, on the practical side, the first time I heard a Lisa system from L-Acoustics was during COVID, and it was in a theater, actually. And so I sat down, I talked to the front of house guy for quite a while, and they were using tracking devices on the wireless mic. So it literally followed the actor, you know, around the stage. They had a scene where there was, you know, like a thunderstorm and rainfall. And I literally, I mean, it literally felt like I was getting wet, even though I knew I wasn't, you know, it was like, I am in the middle of this thunderstorm, you know, it was this. So the experiential side was great. And so I was like, wow. And we began talking to the front of house guy. I said, so tell me, you know, like what is it like to mix? And this is where I get like super practical about how I feel immersive is helpful to, you know, the local church. And he said, you know, mixing on this, he said, you know, back when I started mixing, he said, you know, most of the theaters I went into were mono systems. And so I'm getting all the wireless mics to fit in there, and I'm getting all the, you know, orchestra, and they're all coming out of this, you know, like one sound speaker, you know, our source, this center.
Right. Speaker. Yeah.
And then he said, you know, we moved to stereo. And I'm like, oh, now I've got room because I can pan things a little bit left and right and all of that. And he said, let me show you my show file and the EQs on my microphones using immersive. And he said, I've got these different, you know, sources up front where the actors are going through on all my wireless microphones. I'm basically using a high pass filter. He said, I'm using very little EQ. And I'm like, well, wait a minute. You got the orchestra, you got, you know, and I'm, you know, I'm trying to process this. And he says, do you realize how much we have to destroy audio by using compression, by using EQ, by using, you know, plugins and everything else to get it to come out of these two sound sources up there of left and right? And he said, now, because I've got all the different sources that it's coming from, I really don't have to use much of that at all, because I'm not competing coming out of the same box, trying to get the electric guitar and the voice to come out of the same speaker at the same time. You know, now I've got the voices panned here. I've got the electric guitars out here. I've got, you know, whatever else. I've got this big area, you know, both left and right, and now kind of front of stage to backstage, where I can place these objects, if you will, or sound sources. And so I don't have to use all the, you know, compression that I used to use. I don't have to worry about all the EQ. Things sound very natural. So on the practical side of that, I think, boy, that's pretty amazing to think that, you know, we can now let things be as the sound source, you know, kind of intended them, not trying to craft them and do everything we need to do to get them to come out of, you know, the two speaker sources that we have up front. To me, that was like a revolutionary thought. And then I followed that, like about 2 weeks later, I was at a large church that has an install. And this was very telling to me. The front of house guy said, you know, I went and we pretty much bought the system and decided to do it based on music. He said, but spoken word is amazing. It was a fan-shaped church.
Uh-huh.
And he said that, you know, you would look and people, even in the center, naturally were all looking at the screens, which were left and right, the IMAG screens.
Right.
And he said, to my surprise, when we put in the Lisa system, because now the sound source is perceived coming exactly from where, you know, the pastor is at. More people are watching the pastor. Now, obviously in the back rows that are watching IMAG just because of distance.
Right.
He said in that front center section, he said so many people now are actually watching the pastor versus watching the screens. And I was like, huh, that makes sense, because our eyes and ears work together, right? Right. And so I'm hearing something, and if it's even left, right, even though my brain is kind of perceiving it as center, I'm still, and particularly if I'm not exactly in center, I'm drawn to either the left side or the right side. And so I'm automatically kind of drawn to that IMAG screen, you know? So again, things like that to me were like, okay, there are some very real practical, you know, applications are here. And so not just for music, but also for, you know, preaching and spoken word. I think there are great advantages to being, you know, an immersive system. And again, what I found when I was mixing, just using tracks, I was in my brain, okay, the drums are here, you know, the, you know, guitar's over here, all that. I, you know, naturally, you know, started panning that and kind of laying it out what it looked like on the stage. And it very much felt that way, you know, even though I didn't have the visual cue because it was tracks.
Right.
But at the church that I visited, they got rid of their drum shield. He said, you know, one of the biggest things we had was we had the acoustic drums and they were off to the left. And so I'm like, well, do I have to pan this stuff over there? Do I? And then I, he goes, you know, and they had a shield around their kit. He had it enclosed. Because he said, I wanted, you know, I needed the sound source. I didn't want people to hear the acoustic drums and then the actual drums.
Right.
And he said, so now our drums, which are not center, which are, you know, off stage left, he said, I take and I kind of position the drums of where they're at. And, you know, I think he said he still kept his kick and snare pretty centered, but he was able to kind of emulate where the drums were. So he said, you know, the acoustic drums are now arriving with the reinforced drums. And so it's obviously a much cleaner sound. You're not getting, you know, necessarily multiple arrivals.
Right.
But also for your brain, you're like, yeah, the drums are over there. The guitar player's over there, you know, all of that stuff. And so I think it performs a, you know, fantastic, or it is a fantastic tool that gives us the ability to recreate visually, recreate audibly what we're seeing visually.
Yeah. And something you said sparked like this phrase, you know, like it's all of us together, you know, it's not us versus them. It's not them up on stage. It's us, not us out in the congregation. We are all worshiping together. And it sounds like it's taken the localization of sound sources and made it much more transparent so that we're not thinking about the sound system. Like, even if you're not thinking about the sound system, there's still some mismatch in your brain between what you see and what you hear with a normal, you know, stereo system because of the, like, the first arrival effect. I'm forgetting the real technical names for these, but like, how if something arrives like 20 milliseconds before another one, you know, it's got to be like 10 dB. Yeah. You know, there's got to be a big level change before we, you know, we perceive them as two different things when they're arriving at different times from different directions. All of that stuff, it sounds like those things are taken into account. And then we've kind of removed the way that the sound system colors that. And now we can just be like, all right, I am speaking to you and, you know, I'm listening to this person that I'm seeing. It's much less of a jump for our brain to say, this is what's going on, you know, so that we can actually pay more attention, you know, like we're in a culture that struggles to pay attention for, you know, very long at all with our phones and how many touches we have in a day. You know, the more we can capture somebody's attention for the things that are really important, I think that's definitely another huge, huge possibility for what it could be. Now, I've got a question about the panning, because, like, the again, the nerd in me.
Yes.
So is it like you have pan left and right and then pan forward and backward? Is it like a joystick kind of control? Like what's the actual mechanism that you use to move this stuff around? And what do you have to have, like a special kind of console that can do it? Or what's the interface like between speaker processing system and mixing desk? Like what's that jump kind of like?
Yeah, no, that's great. And we're still evolving in this. So there are some desks that do it really well. There's desks that actually have, if you will, plugins or, the ability to operate and control the Lisa system. The setups that I have seen and, worked on, in particular the desks that I did, like I said, mix some tracks on, you're taking your channel direct out into the immersive engine and then bringing it back into your desk. So the center immersive engine or the processor is really where things are at. And then imagine having yourself like what looks like sort of like a stage, in front of you on your screen. And you are taking in, again, the engine and placing those items in their location. Your mixing board really becomes about level and your EQ and, things like that. But it's going out into the immersive engine where it's being placed in space, if you will. And so you've got this graphic representation. Again, think of something that looks like a stage. And you can move it back in the stage, which you're basically just pushing it back into the room, which is pretty much just adding some reverb in simple terms. I mean, there's much more going on than that, but right. Just adding some reverb to it. So it literally feels like the person that was on the front of the stage now moved to the back of the stage because you're hearing reflections from the stage and everything else, as you would if that person was there live talking. And then you got your moving, if you will, throughout your, your horizontal plane of, your left and right. So the interface is mainly through your placing in through the GUI that the processing engine provides you, where that device is on that stage, and it's doing the processing for that. And then your mixing desk is giving you, the things that we're used to, your level control, your, EQ, any plugins, any effects you're using, kind of standard mixing.
Right. So you're using it as like a post fader direct out going into the engine, and then it's doing all of its spatial processing and then doing the final mix part before it goes out to the speakers?
Yes. Your final mix ends up, coming out of your desk, but going through the engine again. So you're placed in the right space.
Oh, if you will. So if you wanted to get really crazy because you're, a glutton for, for making extra processing and doing extra fun stuff. So let's say you do, you have your guitars and, whatever, your violins placed on a certain spot on the stage, but then you want to subgroup your guitars and compress those. Then those go to the stereo output, but then they're still going to show up in the right spot after the console comes out, or am I getting too far in the weeds?
You're a little getting in the weeds of how it's interacting and happening. I mean, the easiest way to think of it is you're doing a direct channel out for your placement. You still have all of the things that you have on your desk as far, because you're taking the return back. So you're still operating your desk sort of as you normally would. So I can still take my guitars and, put them in a compression group or a smash group or something that I want to do, and so forth.
It's fascinating. So now the real question that I guess a lot of people are probably wanting to know, what is the cost of these immersive systems? And of course there's, a gazillion variables because it's the size of your room, the width, all the different things. Yeah. What's the kind of jump, let's say, for a smaller line array to an immersive system? Like, what's it going to cost extra for that kind of thing?
Yeah, you know, and I'll talk on the let's say the average 400 to 500 seat room, you know, kind of thing. It was surprising to me when I started looking at numbers and hearing numbers on the cost of immersive. In that it's basically in that 20 to 30% premium range. So you're going to, obviously you're paying extra for it, but it's really not that much extra. And the main reason is because you're using smaller speakers, because now you have a lot, you have more of them, if you will. And so you can get the, you know, SPL output and so forth because you've got more speakers up there. But they're smaller speakers. So rather than using like a, you know, big 12 or 15 inch, you know, dual 15 line array left and right with, you know, 10 boxes, you'll have smaller speakers at each one of the five sources that you have up there.
Right.
So when you know, basically you're paying the premium is for the processor in a lot of ways, because usually the speaker cost actually potentially comes down, you know, but then you've got the processor that you need to add in. So the premium is not like jumping from, you know, X times in order to do this. And there have been one or two cases in very unique situations where it's like, wow, I could do this left-right hang of a line array, or I could do this immersive system, and it's a wash.
Wow.
Yeah. And one other thing that I will add in too is with an immersive system, the perceived level is actually greater because you're spreading the sources out and so forth. And I don't know all technically how it happens, but I definitely did experience this where I was mixing on the immersive system at, you know, around 90, 92, but it felt like it was 96, 98 dB, wow. You know, there was just this perception. And I think it's because of the impact that you get, because all this, you know, the sources are spread out. And so there's just a different perception of loudness. And so partially in the concert world, that's why immersive is catching on. People are kind of jumping on board because everybody's, you know, concerned about, are we going to end up in, you know, legal ramifications as far as how loud a concert can be,
you right.
know, type of thing. And people are most concerned about impacting the experience, you know. Only the guy with his Apple Watch who comes back and complains every Sunday when I hit 92 dB, you know, is worried about how loud it is, right? You know?
Yeah.
But, you know, because of some, you know, legislation and so forth, I think we'll see an even bigger push towards, you know, this immersive style of system, because the system just feels like it has more impact.
That's crazy. Well, I mean, you know, like as I'm dissecting all my years of like, you know, trying to understand audio systems and intermodulation and, you know, comb filtering and timing mm-hmm. differences and stuff, the fact that it's, yeah, that your sound sources are all better localized and there's less kind of one sound source in all of its resonance is not competing for the same speaker movement. At the same time, that makes sense that it would have more perceived impact without actually having to have more actual, like, joules per square meter, you know, like dBFPL right. energy yep. driving it. That sounds really fascinating.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's exciting. Now, is it for everybody? No, you know?
yeah.
It's kind of like, I'm going to date myself as I always do, but back in the late 90s, I designed a bunch of left, center, right cross matrix systems.
Uh-huh.
So you'd have this LCR and part of Center, was also part of Wright and all this stuff. And we thought, man, we are really cool. We're doing this. And what we found out is not everybody can operate and mix on it.
Right.
It could go really south really fast.
Yes.
And you know, those designs, you know, kind of gone away. You know, I think immersive, particularly at this point, is it's pretty easy to mix on once you understand and you get it and you do all of that. But there's a level of expertise, you know, that is definitely needed with it.
Yeah.
And again, not every room is built for an immersive system. So, I think, you know, we'll continue to see this growth in it. I think it is very valuable. It's another definitely tool in the toolbox. And I think as we continue to get more and more, not only acceptance, but kind of expectation of immersive sound, you know, we will see more and more implementation of it.
Awesome. Well, I'm excited to hear my first one. I've got the itch. Thanks, Gary. Now I got to go scratch it someplace. So if anybody in the Midwest has one of these and you want to show me around on it, reach out. I would be happy to check it out. Speaking of reaching out, you can find us now on Instagram. We are at Church Sound Podcast, all one word, no underscores or anything. And if you found this podcast helpful and want to help us reach more church sound techs, would you take just a moment and rate and leave a review on this podcast wherever you're listening? Just a couple minutes goes a long way to help us reach more church sound techs. Church Sound Podcast is part of the Pro Sound Web Podcast Network. I'm James Attaway.
And I'm Gary Zanstra.
Thanks for tuning in and have an amazing service this week.